All right, so now we are reaching the fourth of the in service to spirit, reaching the element of water. And this is the element of water that is most universal, transpersonal. I would say that approximately half of all the jobs in the Pisces tribe are also renunciate. It's pretty much 10 or 11 out of 12 of Pisces, of Virgo and Sag are renunciate. About half of Pisces are. In other words, if somebody had the Virgo job in the Pisces tribe, or you know, Sagittarius job in the Pisces tribe, these are definitely renunciate lineages also. The transpersonal approach. It's a giver. It's also in the category of giver. So now we've actually done three of the givers. We have two of them. We haven't done Capricorn or Cancer. So we've done Virgo and Pisces, which are clearly, I mean, in the category of in service to spirit, those are the two that it's way easier to see how they are in service to spirit, more than Sag or Gemini. Part of it has to do with this knowledge and sense of what the renunciate traditions used to be. Part of it has to do with the non-secular, non-householder aspect of these four, historically. What is the project of the, we're going to look now, what is the project of the Pisces Mystery School? And not suffering. Any specific position, but the main project.
And suffering.
That's a good way to put it. It's like saying, how can we help and heal everyone? How can we help and heal everyone? And this is the flip side of Sagittarius. So Pisces is kind of like, I will forego my own final liberation as long as anyone is unrealized or suffering. So that's why historically words like self-abnegation, service is its own reward, better to give than to receive, these go with Pisces and Virgo. The difference between the two is that one is sensation function and the other is feeling function. I want to just take a brief detour to talk about the feeling function, because this, I didn't mention this when we talked about Scorpio, because it's a little hard to start with the feeling function when you use it with Scorpio. Because it's really when we look at Pisces and Cancer that we really get a good sense of what the feeling function is. Let me make a point here that when we say feeling in this work, it's not the same as emotion. Often those two words are used interchangeably. For the purpose of this work, emotion, anyone on the wheel has emotions. Nobody's without emotion. Emotion is a reaction to events. It's a response to what takes place to us. Some people have stronger emotions than others. But just say because, let's say you could have a triple fire person. You have somebody's chart that has absolutely no water on it. Does it mean they don't have emotions? Heck no! In fact, they generally have some of the fiercest, strongest emotions that exist. They react fast to events. However, feeling is a different category. And it's really hard to explain in a modern context. What is the feeling function? Sometimes attributed with feeling is the word value, values. But even that doesn't really tell the story. Sometimes I've tried to explain it through the expression having a mammalian heart. Reptiles don't have the feeling function. It's the kind of thing that would cause a mother to risk her life to save her child. But it's also the kind of thing that would cause certain types of people to be incapacitated for hours when they go by roadkill. But not everyone has that experience. Or the ability to tune in to the suffering around them while other people, they're oblivious to it.
Isn't that empathy?
Which is why empathy is part of the feeling function. So it's the ability to sense into our mammalian human condition and generate values from that. Good Samaritans probably have a strong feeling function. I mean, you can actually make good decisions with the mind, but it's when something is overwhelming a person and they just simply have to respond. There's this guy back in the 1980s who was one of the founders of the Aquarian New Age movement. Can't think of his name. But he was like one of these first proponents of cosmic overview, celestial view of the world. Everything was love and light. The world is unfolding as it should. All is well. And he had a major conversion. He went to places where there was unbelievable amounts of suffering. And he just said, I finally, in my gut, had to react to this. Something must be done. So it's like he was overwhelmed by his feeling function. His capacity to detach and just see the big view was overridden. Now, we're not looking at this as positive, negative, good, or bad. In fact, there's a downside for having too much feeling function. If you're completely overrun by the feeling function and have nothing else, then that is the person who, it's like you go by roadkill and you can't function for the rest of the day. You know, you're taking on the suffering.
It's sympathy versus empathy. You get taken in.
It generally is associated with the fact that a person doesn't have any boundaries.
Right.
When that occurs, and a person is working on Pisces, it is also what we call an honest mistake. You know, so really the person that goes there too far, well, then they need to basically develop what? Autonomy, boundaries, having a sense of self, and so on. But we don't want to throw out the value that comes from having a feeling function either. So the basic qualities of empathy and compassion are in this mystery school.
I remember us talking about the age of Pisces being ushered in by the great symbol of Jesus Christ on the cross, the crucifixion, as the ultimate symbol of Pisces, you know, and the martyr. Would you say that that's a healthy expression of Pisces?
These days, in the last few years, I almost never fail to include in the talk the pitfalls, the honest mistakes of Pisces. So originally, if we go back to the beginning of Pisces, Pisces is, as you put it, it's, you know, like, end suffering. How can we help and heal everyone? By the way, one of the greatest distinctions between Cancer and Pisces is that Pisces is indiscriminate. It's everybody, even the Dalai Lama's version of it, which is, what do you mean, sentient beings? I don't want to hear the sentient being stuff. All life, you know, not just why are humans special here, you know. So it's to relieve transpersonally the suffering everywhere. That is its project. But then there's been a variety of techniques tried out historically in ancient shamanic cultures, and they're still done this way in certain parts of the world. There'll be someone in a tribe called the Sin Eater. And the sin eater would be trained to suck the poison, possession, or illness out of another. But they were also trained to regurgitate or digest the poison. There wasn't any requirement that they carry the illness. Then we have the debacle of Latter-day Christianity. Honest mistake. Basically, I will die for... Shouldn't we all be... Jesus died for our sins. And then you basically have the glorification of this through a certain kind of mortification of the flesh. You basically, you know, if we bloodlet, if we stick pins in, or every religion seems to have one of these, you know, reenactment of dragging the cross through the streets and being beaten by whips and the whole thing, you know, self-flagellation and, but just this whole martyr. This is why in mainstream astrology, Pisces is martyrdom, victim, you know, things like that. That's his shadow side. There could be better ways of approaching this. Like, for example, the vow of the Bodhisattva. I will forego my own final liberation until everyone is realized. But maybe something else. A new leading edge paradigm for healing. Which kind of combines the best of something we talked about yesterday with Aquarius. Kind of like combining a little bit of Aquarius with Pisces. And then you get an individual who's just not, who's not just a technical healer, knows how to hit the right points, but has empathy, who can merge, can feel where the suffering and sorrow is in another, but then simultaneously gives that permission, gives that person permission for their own predicament. Incredibly important. Otherwise, you end up feeling guilty that if you haven't taken it on, or that if they don't get well, there's two things there. Taking Pisces feels they should take it on, or they feel somehow guilty if the person doesn't get better, so they'll take it on more. Honest mistake. So to be able to have not just detachment. I mean, how many of us have gone to doctors or therapists who are totally Aquarian types? It's as if you're talking to a Pleiadian. They don't know anything about your predicament, but they may know where the right points are. But you don't feel gotten. Maybe there's some people that need technicians, you know, to be fair about it. But then you sometimes go to someone who's too empathic. They merge with you, and they've never given you permission to actually have the predicament you have. Yes,
I've worked with a fair amount of critical care nurses over the years, and I've noticed a pattern that the ones that let the pain through, in other words, they weren't locked into their professionalism, the ones that actually grieved with the families and really showed up and were really present were the ones that had the least amount of trauma, physical ailment, nervous breakdowns, ulcers, heart conditions, high blood pressure later on in life. So it's actually healthy to let the barrier of professionalism soften and really be present with each person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a basic mammalian humanness to the to Pisces and to Cancer. You know, you really, and then and another way to put it, if you combine Pisces with Aquarius, we can do some of these combinations now as we move through the different mystery schools, then you actually get the full imagery of Kuan Yin. Detached, but also universally compassionate toward all. It's sort of the it's definitely loving. It's not just the idea of love, but it's also transpersonal, and there's a certain degree of space there. You know, you're not being taken care of by your personal mother. It's a larger sense of this, of the feminine. Now, Pisces has been on my mind a lot recently. Maybe it's because Neptune is there. And in fact, our next two events in the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School have basically the same title: Renaissance of the Sacred Feminine, Redreaming the Magical Connection Between the Land and the Sky. But it's this Renaissance of the Sacred Feminine. And I've been thinking a lot about this, that the universe is, in essence, female. The masculine tried to turn that around. That the original emanation of the one reality is a female emanation. Her active expression is all of creation. Masculinity came after that. And the Pisces version of it, is that universal celestial female energy. It's not a personal mother. I call her Great Mother, Great Mystery. It's my way of trying to remember this. Other people call it the Divine Feminine, the Sacred Feminine. The Great Mother, but in the overall sense, not a personal mother. The fact I often remember the lyrics of the song I really love from 1966. And the lyric goes, "And I looked into the heart of the whole universe, and I noticed it was loving." Which is that ultimately the largest presence we can experience transpersonally is that feminine love that comes from Great Mother, Great Mystery. That is Pisces. And to be able to connect into that can really heal all. And it must be said, there are plenty of people, and at various stages of life, it happens, we don't feel it. We feel disconnected from it. So the Pisces place on the wheel is always there to reconnect it to us to it. The well. Or the universal waters, celestial waters of life coming from Kuan Yin. Universal healing. So, did you get a sense of it?
Yeah. I have a question about the shadow here of Pisces. Because for me with Pisces, like, the shadow isn't so clearly defined where it starts and where the healthy. Because just to clarify here, it seems like Pisces' ability to merge with another human being can kind of go in both directions. Because there is a healthy expression of Pisces that does merge.
Yeah.
Feel, but still has boundaries and doesn't take on the other person. But there is a shadow side of Pisces that merges without boundaries, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's very tricky. And in fact, I need to bring in another element of the Pisces mystery. It's connected to ecstatic states. Mm-hmm. It's connected to mysticism. The ecstatic state aspect of it. Which actually is quite a feminine. It's like for example, these days, back in my day it was LSD. Today it's ayahuasca. We're pretty curious because, of course, LSD is primarily a mind consciousness thing. But ayahuasca is so Pisces. I mean, with a vitality, with a dose of Scorpio, of course. But it's still a female presence. I don't know if anybody who said that LSD was a female presence. And so there has been historically in the quest for Pisces an interest in ways to connect and merge with these higher ecstatic states of the mother. And so we have, for example, in the time of Greece, we have the Greek god who is identified with Pisces. Dionysus. Now, on a superficial level, Dionysus is the god of wine, women, and song. But at a deeper level of understanding, of all the gods, he was the closest to the feminine principle. But he was also transpersonal. One of the ways I like to define Dionysus, more than anything, loved to bring ecstatic states to women. Not a woman. The bringing of ecstatic states to women. And of course, the old stories, you know, there's Dionysus, kind of you could even think of him today as a modern-day musician who's dispensing ayahuasca, leading ayahuasca circles, you know. But in the old days, maybe they were doing that then. Maybe it was the mushrooms, you know. Maybe it was a mead. Maybe it was some other elixir. And then he would be surrounded by the Menaids, the group of women who are the camp followers. It's not like he was they were with him because he was their husband. No, he was the one who had the good drugs and the good music. So they would be able to go into their wild, ecstatic states.
So what is the relationship between Pan and Dionysus?
He's way more earthy. There's more danger involved. He's not a mystic. It's down and dirty, as it were.
But they both go for the ecstatic wild.
Yeah.
So they're in the same category.
But they're both water signs. Yeah. And it can actually be quite an interesting hookup. If you have a person who's a combination of Pisces and Scorpio, you know, then you get, wow, you talked about the full-on Pan-Dionysian, you know? I mean, it's all the way in. I mean, it's all of that. But the Dionysus, you know, even in one of the stories of him, he gets the women so out of control, so wild and irrational, that they ripped him to pieces. And that becomes an early story of the dying and reborn God. And in fact, there's even a connection here with Christianity, because early Christianity, much of the early imagery of Jesus came from Dionysus. I mean, we're talking about free Rome. Including the fact that Jesus loved to hang out with the women. Boy, the male disciples didn't like that very much. You know, his connection to female mystery schools was huge. And that was because of the Dionysian connection and the dying and reborn God element. I'm not making this up. I mean, there's whole books written on the way in which the cult of Dionysus became Jesus. Mm-hmm. But before, and actually, this is an intriguing issue. Hold your question just for a second, please. Women with Mars and Pisces, who are they looking for?
Jesus.
Huh? What did you say?
Jesus.
Yes! But pre-Rome Jesus. You know? It's true.
Jesus /Dionysus.
Yes, yes. And the problem there is just for men, it's like for men with Venus and like for men who have Venus and Pisces or Virgo, women with Mars in Pisces or Virgo have a huge problem finding any one human being that, because a man with Venus and Virgo realizes his lover is the Earth. Venus and Pisces realizes his lover is Great Mother, Great Mystery.
The Virgo who sees the Earth as his lover, would that be a final stage? Pisces, would that be a final stage?
Well, then it's the sacred marriage. But if his path is to be in a personal relationship, then it's the final stage for meeting a workable partnership. Yeah. For other people that are not on a personal relationship path, it doesn't matter at that point. I mean, you have it all.
Who in here is Pisces Sun or Pisces Rising or Pisces Moon?
Yeah, let's reveal our Pisces.
Pisces what? Pisces,
and then Lynn, a lot of Pisces, and Yali, and Lynn is a Pisces sun.
I have a question too. If I have Pisces on the descendant, that is me wanting that out of a partner.
Correct.
Right?
That's right.
To have some of these. Loving,
quality. Capricorn moons are completely untrained to be in a position to receive nourishment. Because they're the captain who goes down with the ship. So if you have Pisces on the descendant, or Cancer on the descendant, and I've talked to several women in the group that have this situation, because it's not a gender issue here. The idea is the partner is the one who's providing nourishment to you. So, yeah. For you, if your whole role was some kind of latter-day Dionysian master at bringing ecstatic experiences to women, ultimately it falls short if there's not Pisces for you on the descendant. Because what you'd be longing for is your own nourishment, not just that it should be a great provider of nourishment.
So it goes both ways.
Yeah. And in healthy balance, if both would be happening. Was another question? The predicament can be strong if an individual has Venus or Mars in Pisces or Virgo, because they keep trying to project it onto one person to be that great mother, great mystery, or Dionysian transpersonal healer. And it's just unfair to try to have a human being be all that. That's why you really have to have the sacred marriage element of it, and then you can, of course, be with someone who has many of those characteristics. But gee, you're projecting universal qualities on the person. It's just a human being doing their best trying to love you, and they fall short.
Do you recommend for these people to have a deep spiritual practice to kind of fulfill that need for the universal love?
Many men with Mars in Pisces, Venus in Pisces, the projection, end up having a bhakti practice of some kind. You know, they become lovers of Mother Divine, that kind of thing.
Lovers of what?
Mother Divine. You know, they become bhakti intoxicants. You know, loving the feminine expression of the God of one reality. So if a man has Mars in Pisces, then his objective is to learn about it. You know, what is it going to take for you to be a giving, loving, sensitive, empathic, and without running into the downside of taking on everybody's problems?
This is a hard position in mainstream society because it's not valued by the current cultural paradigm either.
It's one of the versions of masculinity that is truly a candidate for total stage 3 work. You know, because a lot of women will say, oh my God, that's the type of man I want. One who is just there to provide nourishment and ecstatic experiences to me. But there's also weak versions of this. The guy who gets lost in your problems, the person who takes it on, the person who then is considered to be the stage 2 caricature, you know, the wimpy new age male. The women will say, I want a really sensitive guy. Until you have one, and then say, no, I think I really want some alpha male. It's different for so many people. I mean, this is not one size fits all at all. Right? I guess we've covered pretty much as much as we need about Pisces.